The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see? Pick up the mirror now, America. Go ahead, pick it up. What are you, afraid? It's just a mirror, America. What could it do to you except reflect your image? The Majority Report.
It is Tuesday, January 18th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report, broadcasting to you live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. I hope all of you had an enjoyable long weekend. And I really hope you had the opportunity to listen to the podcast yesterday. There was virtually none of me, which may be a welcome change for many of you. And a clip of a speech that Martin Luther King gave at the Ebenezer Church in 1967, I believe it was. Clips of that speech where he basically became a full-throated opponent of the Vietnam War and expressed why in the context of his civil rights struggle. And then we had a news report of his death by a news report of his assassination anchored by Walter Cronkite, and then followed with a live performance of Nina Simone. I guess it must have been about 3 days after the death of the murder of Martin Luther King, and she sang a song that she wrote in response to his death, and also has a good interplay with the audience. So I suggest you check that out. And I also want to remind you folks that you can listen to the program if you have a smartphone device on Stitcher. And it's the way I listen to the program every day. I load it up after the show and I listen to it on the subway, and I listen on the way in the morning just to see, just as quality control. And so I recommend you use Stitcher. If you have a device like that, a very easy way to listen to it. And I think you can, I'm not sure if you can listen live via Stitcher to our program. Not yet, I don't think. And I also want to remind you that our sponsor, JustCoffee.coop, JustCoffee.coop sells coffee, great coffee, chocolate, tea, gifts. It's all fair trade. It is the company is owned by the employees. They have been longtime supporters of myself and other progressive media. And if you put the words majority into the coupon code box, you will get a 10% discount. And they're the only sponsor of this program at the moment. And that is not because we haven't had other offers. But I got news for you. I'm not going to do, you know, gold or erectile dysfunction. I'm not going to do either one of those. That is a promise. Now, on radio gigs, if somebody asks me to do it, there's a slight chance I might. I ain't going to do it for this show. We're going to have other sponsors probably in the future, but they're going to be either companies of listeners or companies that I use or genuinely appreciate what they're doing. So, quality products. I will stand by behind anything that we sponsor on this program. And it's not necessarily a luxury I had in radio, although, you know, if you wanted a pajamagram, get one. That's fine. But I'm not going to shill for crap I don't believe in or that I think is dangerous on this program. I just won't do it. And if that's I don't care what happens. Tomorrow, the Republicans will vote in the House to repeal the health care reform bill. They were calling it the job-killing health care reform bill for days, aside from it being patently false claim. And I will get to the false nature of the claim. But it is interesting to note that today, House Speaker John Boehner abandoned labeling the current health care law as job-killing, instead calling it job-crushing and job-destroying. Now, what that means is two things. It means that Boehner is sensitive to using that type of rhetoric in the wake of the Gabby Giffords assassination attempt and killing of six other people by a nut job who is living in perhaps the most virulently, politically violent, charged area of the country at a very virulently, politically charged, violently charged time in our history. So Boehner is obviously sensitive to it and has changed his rhetoric. That will mean that means the second thing that means is that the teabaggers will hate him even more. Because don't you know, Sarah Palin, they're not going to silence me. I've been trained by some Republicans as to what blood libel means now, so I'm going to go on to Sean Hannity's show and explain that I'm not going to be silenced, Sean. I know that blood libel now comes from the medieval times where people said things about Jews. But for your information, it was in a Wall Street Journal op-ed just days before I wrote it. How do I know this? My staff has told me. After the fact. Don't you know? They won't quiet me, Sean. And you know what I say? God bless. God bless. Run, Sarah. Run. Run for your nomination. Become your party's nominee. And anybody who stops you in the Republican Party, why, don't they understand? Don't they understand? Let's play this clip. It's called The Battle Hymn of Sarah Palin. And folks, if you're not on board the Sarah Palin train, you should know it's a cold day in Washington.
She's a cool blast from Alaska, in grand with common sense. She's not a Harvard lawyer, but she knew what the founders meant. A cold blast from the north that freezes Congress in their tracks. With God and the Tea Party, she's gonna take it back. Sarah Palin, she won't listen to their bunk. Sarah Palin's
You're gonna have to listen to the whole show to listen to that whole song. We'll put that on at the end of the program today. I will post the video on majority.fm. You need to see it. I mean, I imagine that it's what teabaggers saw when they saw that Yes We Can video, but a slightly different production value and slightly more insane.
That sounded like Merle Haggard.
The guy's got a great voice. Got to hand it to him. Got a great voice, but she's going to freeze. I mean, if you listen to the words and start to break them down, we'll try and get a transcript. They're absolutely crazy. But tomorrow, the Republicans will attempt, this will be on Wednesday, will attempt to repeal the Health Care Reform Act. And what's very interesting about this, and they're doing it now in the headwinds of polls showing a majority of the country does not want to repeal this, because the country's starting to realize there are some tremendous benefits to this bill. That being, you know, if you have a 26-year-old kid or a kid up to 26-year-old, they can stay on your health care. That if you have pre-existing conditions, you cannot be denied a health care. That you cannot suffer from rescission. That 30 million new Americans will be allowed to receive health insurance and the subsequent health care. Now, all this kicks in, or some of it's already kicked in, some of it kicks in sporadically through the next 2 years up until 2014. But the Republicans, they can't repeal that part. And they also realize they can't repeal the mandate, because that would really seriously debilitate their buddies in the insurance industry. So they don't have many talking points left to argue to their nut job followers, you know, because no one's buying. You've lost your freedom. You have no freedom now to go and pay too much for bad health insurance. Nobody really buys that anymore except for the fringe Republicans who control, sadly, the Republican Party. So the latest thing the Republicans have had to do is to lie. This is very interesting because they were fighting health care based upon your freedoms and socialism. But now they're actually having to come up with the lie that health care is going to create, is going to crush jobs. They were saying killing jobs before. Now they've changed their rhetoric to crushing jobs. Because they can't argue that it's also going to cost more money. It's actually going to save $230 billion over the next 10 years, is according to the CBO. And so they can't argue that. They're going to say it's crushing jobs. And what they are pegging this on is a report by the CBO that some people may leave their jobs or downgrade their employment because they're no longer shackled by the need to get health care from their employers. So, and they said this could happen to like 0.5% of the workforce, and Republicans have extrapolated this number into 650,000 jobs lost. They're saying it's crushing jobs. Now, understand the distinction here. You have not jobs that are going away. In fact, it's going to open up employment. It's people voluntarily saying, I'm no longer going to work full-time or going to work at McDonald's, or I don't know that you get health care at McDonald's, or some crappy job. I have enough money to retire on, but I didn't have enough money to pay for health care. Now I do. So it's people willingly, voluntarily leaving the job force. And Republicans are saying this is job killing. When in fact, when they leave that job force, it's actually going to open up jobs. So to the extent that it's going to have any net effect on the number of jobs, it could very well open up jobs because people are no longer beholden to those jobs or that type of employment because they have other opportunities for health care. But it's fascinating to watch the Republicans have to lie about this now. Because this is not what they were hoping to base this repeal on. Some marginal lie that is easily disproved in about a half a dozen ways. So good luck to you, Republicans. We know this is a publicity stunt. Unfortunately, the Republicans are having to play to their ever-increasingly crazy base, which is going to, again, once these people start to get into any position of governance, they reveal themselves as completely bankrupt of a governing philosophy. Good luck to the Republicans. All right, now we're going to take a break. When we come back, based upon reports, Bernie Sanders was in the news the other day talking about this, maybe today. But based upon reports we've had for the past couple of weeks, Barack Obama is going to introduce the idea of cutting Social Security by raising the retirement age. Our next guest is going to tell us why not only is that a mistake, but we should be doing the opposite. We'll be right back. We are back. I am Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to actually welcome back to this program of sorts. You may not recall it, but He first was a guest on the Majority Report back in October 14th of 2004 when Janine Garofalo and I interviewed him. It's a pleasure to have him back. He is the an American economist, of course, and professor at the Lyndon B. Johnson School of Public Affairs. And at the he is also a senior scholar with the Levy Economics Institute at Bard College, and author of many books, including two textbooks and the latest Predator State in 2008. Welcome to the program, Professor.
Thanks very much.
Did I say James Galbraith? I don't know if I said...
I don't think you mentioned my name.
Well, that's, you know, the intro thing, it's only been 7 years for me, so I'm still working on that. So I wanted to have you on for a couple reasons, but most importantly, there's a lot of talk that President Obama will introduce the idea of raising minimum age for retirement for Social Security in his State of the Union address. And you have written recently and often, I believe, that not only is this not the right course to take, but we should be doing the opposite. Please explain.
Well, first of all, most of the reporting I've seen suggests that the proposal likely to be made is for a increase in the age at which you can get full Social Security benefits. Let's say pushing it up. It's already scheduled to nose up to 67 and pushing it on up to 69 over time. That is nothing more than a benefit cut for the very large number of people who take early retirement, which typically is accessible to them at the age of 62. People who are unemployed, people who are whose jobs are dead-end jobs, people who have worked a long time in hard jobs, and who don't feel that they can go on another 5 or 7 years, typically take that early retirement in Social Security. When you raise the age at which you can get full benefits, what you're doing to those people is giving them an immediate cut in the benefits that they receive. And that's what this is about. It's a thinly disguised way of cutting Social Security benefits for the most vulnerable American workers. Say those who have worked in hard jobs and who are anxious to get out of them.
Has there been any work done? I mean, I've seen numbers that this would, I mean, it's very, I guess, difficult to calculate because there's so many moving pieces to this, but what type of percentage of cut that would actually be to Social Security?
That's well known, depending on how high you raise the full benefit age. But you're talking about a very definite reduction in the benefits available, and that the Social Security Administration can tell you exactly what those numbers are.
Okay, and so we have the potential for cuts for Social Security. It's patently unfair. We also have 60% of the American retirees relying on over half of their income, their retirement income, coming from Social Security, and like you say, it really is an imposition on the most vulnerable amongst us, and I would imagine also a bigger cut for the poor and the middle class, because they tend to have a lifespan that is after the age of 60 that is shorter, in fact, than those who don't rely on Social Security.
Sure. People in the bottom half of the distribution of income have shorter life expectancies as a result of the fact that they've worked in harder jobs, they've earned lower incomes, and they've had less good medical care over the course of their lives. So definitely baked into the cake as far as they're concerned.
Now,
it is very much something that would fall heavily on those least able to bear it. At a time when people have lost, middle class people, lower middle class people have lost the value of their houses and have lost also any private savings that they may have accumulated before the crisis has often been very badly hit, and they're not getting any interest on any cash that they may have saved up either. So it's a time when Social Security benefits are increasingly becoming the mainstay of of middle class, working class retirements.
Now, if we have time, I'd like to get into the writing you've done in terms of the false fear that people have of the unjustified fear people have of the deficit and debt in this country. But we should reiterate at this point that Social Security does not in any way contribute to the deficit. It's fully self-funding. And so faced with what you've just described in terms of the economic situation for Americans in this country, you have proposed the notion of actually lowering the minimum age in which people can fully retire. Is that right?
Well, what I would like to see is recognition of the fact that the crisis has cost us about 11 million jobs relative to what we ought to have right now. And even if we had the most brilliantly enlightened and aggressive policy, we're just not going to be able to create 11 million additional jobs in a very short period of time. So a great many people, and particularly older workers who have been very hard hit in the crisis and have suffering very high unemployment rates, are facing, under present conditions, many years of filing for unemployment insurance, looking for jobs that they're not going to get. It doesn't make any sense for people who would ordinarily and like to be able to retire to put them under this kind of pressure to stay in the labor force. So what I'm suggesting is that what we should do is create a window for, say, 3 years in which people who choose to retire at age 62 or higher could do so without any loss of Social Security benefits, and let those people, if they wish to, take that opportunity and leave the labor force. In that case, you would be opening up employment for younger workers, for whom it's a much more pressing priority, people who are about to start families, just finished school, for whom 4 or 5 years of job search is a very big blot on the work history that will damage them all their lives. Why not try and fix this problem of the large number of people who have been hit by this recession and give them a bit more comfort and stability going forward, and at the same time open up jobs for young people who are blocked at the moment because everybody who has a job is holding on to it for dear life.
And to a certain extent, it's a wash if you're, I don't know the specific numbers, but I imagine there's at least, to the extent that there would be additional cost or the additional burden on the Social Security Trust Fund, it would be mitigated by the not having to pay these people unemployment benefits.
Well, there would be some offsets, but the proposal that I think has already been enacted to cut the payroll tax by a couple of percentage points for a year or so, with the government writing a check to the trust fund to make up the deficiency, tells you and shows you that the government can put anything into the Social Security Trust Fund that it wants. We don't need to be concerned about that problem. It can be taken care of. It's an accounting issue, not really an economic problem. What we need to think about is, where we are. We have suffered a very damaging hit to the economy, one from which, as I say, we're not going to recover easily, and certainly older workers are not going to recover easily. So why don't we do something that's based upon just pure common sense?
Well, why don't we? I mean,
good question. Common sense is in short supply. I wish I could sell it. I think I could probably command a pretty high price.
Now, so let's talk about this notion of the deficit, because I think, the argument for your proposal, I think, speaks for itself. It's not terribly complicated, and it makes a tremendous amount of sense. The only argument I think that could be validly made about it is somehow that we don't want to pay back the money that we have borrowed from the Social Security Trust Fund so that we can continue to finance tax cuts and the decrease in revenue that's coming to the general fund of the government because we're terrified of deficits and debt. But you have a response to just the general notion of our concern about the deficit and debt. Can you walk people through that? I know it's going to get a little bit weedy, but this is the place to do it.
Sure. Well, my view is that we have some serious economic problems in the country. We've got to be focused on them. Unemployment, with practically 10% of the labor force unemployed, and a great many more people who would look for work if it were available. That's a big problem. Energy is a big problem. The problems coming down the pike on the environment are massive problems. We ought to be thinking and talking and working on those problems. The fact that the federal government is spending more and than it's taking in taxes is not, in any economic sense, a problem. It is something which is, first of all, entirely normal in the history of the United States and in the history of all major countries. There have only been about seven times in the entire history since 1790 that the government has run a balanced budget or a surplus, and those have always been followed by economic contractions. It's not a good thing for the economy for the government to try to balance its budget. It simply means that the private sector has less money to spend and tends to get into financial difficulty.
Wait, so, sorry, could you explain that dynamic?
Oh, it's very simple. It's very simple. If the government is taking more in taxes out of the economy than it is putting into the economy in spending, then private households are going to be squeezed. They're going to be squeezed, and they can only make up for it by taking on a lot of debt, which tends to be unsustainable, because unlike the government, private households do have to earn incomes in order to pay their debts. But when the government runs a deficit and issues bonds to the banking system or to private households to cover that deficit, all it has to do is to put some numbers into some bank account to pay the interest. It's, the government has control over the means of payment. That's why we have a government. And it is not a burden on the government to meet those obligations so long as they're actually in the currency that the government issues, which in our case they are. So the notion here that there is some economic limit on what the government can do by way of spending in excess of taxes is just not founded in fact. There is behind this some vague idea that there is a private capital market that could make the cost of borrowing go very high. But then you would have to ask, if that were the case, why is that private capital market supplying funds to the government right now for 30 years at interest rates which are historically low? So if people in the capital market can talk about all this all they want, but as a matter of fact, when the Treasury announces a bond issue for 20 or 30 years, they buy that thing up at a very high price and a very low yield. So they're clearly not worried, in practical terms, about the kinds of things that they're talking about.
So that worry is what is known in the vernacular as bond vigilantism. Is that right? This notion
that we're
afraid that people aren't going to loan the government money at reasonable rates, when we talk about the idea that somehow the U.S. government is going to default, that means that bondholders will be afraid to loan us money at a low rate or be incentivized to loan us money only at a higher interest rate because it's a riskier proposition. But that's all just sort of, whether or not that's true, there's clearly no indication of that. If somebody's going to lend us money for 30 years at whatever, 3 or 4% money, that's basically a vote of confidence that we're going to be able to meet our obligations.
Well, it's written into the Constitution that we're going to meet those obligations, so we're clearly going to meet them. The kind of worries that you're mentioning are legitimate if you're talking about a country, say Argentina, which has to borrow in dollars in order to finance its imports, or Greece, which borrows in euro, a currency that it uses but doesn't control. But in the case of the United States, or in the case of the United Kingdom, or in the case of Japan or China, these countries borrow in their own national currency, and the government is going to be able to meet those obligations. It's a mechanical matter, and operationally, there's no restriction on it. There may be some legal restrictions. I mean, the Congress might say we're in a fit of folly that we're not going to pay the bills, but in fact, the Constitution actually inhibits them from doing that. So even that is not considered by anybody who looks at it closely to be a very serious risk.
But aren't now the what we would hear would be the concerns? Well, if you pay those obligations, okay, we don't have the revenue to take it in. You pay those obligations because, and you don't have the money that you can borrow because people are loaning at such high rates. You have to print more money. Doesn't isn't that going to create runaway inflation?
The risk of rising inflation is a real risk. That is a that's the economic issue that, that to the extent we have one, we should be focused on. Right now, it's a it's a very minor risk because we're not running it very close to capacity. The only place where we're likely to get inflationary pressure is from the supply of energy, essentially. It is the fact that we are running into supply constraints, particularly with oil, and with the willingness to use other cheap sources like coal, which for very, very good reasons we shouldn't be using so much of. That's going to cause us cost pressures, going to cause us what we'll see as inflationary pressures. But those can't be dealt with by financial policy. They can only be dealt with by a very aggressive and innovative energy policy. I mean, we have to deal with that problem as we face it, or we are going to, in fact, run into difficulties. So I'm not saying there are no issues here. There are issues. But we need to be realistic about what they are and approach them in an intelligent way.
Now, I know you have contact with you've been on the Hill to testify, and you know, particularly in terms of the so-called deficit commission, which or debt commission, which really I don't even know why we still discussed. It was supposed to have 14 votes for it to be a valid report, but I guess they lowered the bar down to 11. Because that's what they got. And but what is your sense in terms of where the administration is heading, and what are the log jams to sort of understanding these issues in the way that you're laying them out to us? Because it seems to be somewhat mysterious on some level that the Obama administration would put things like Social Security cuts on the table. It seems like something that they've been planning to do since even almost their inauguration, when they were talking about some type of grand bargain with entitlements. What is your sense as to where the roadblocks there, or maybe roadblocks is the wrong way to look at it?
Well, I hope that the president and his policy team will come down on the side of realism here and on the side of justice and make a principled defense of the most valuable programs that we have, Social Security and Medicare being very high on that list, and let the new majority in the House of Representatives, the Republican majority, pursue and try to sell to the American public its program of cuts, which so far they have been unwilling, perhaps unable, to specify. And this has always been, this is maybe the third time in my professional lifetime we've seen this in the early 1980s, 1994, now, when Republicans come into power vowing that they are going to cut everything in sight, and then when it comes down to it, being unable and unwilling to do so because they are faced with reality, understand that that these programs are immensely valuable to the American public, and that it would be politically very damaging to cut them if there is, in fact, principled resistance and a clear explanation from the president about why it would be bad policy to do so. So that's my hope, is that we will see this discussion being carried out with some honesty on the part of the White House. Whether we'll get that or not, I'm not sure. My great fear is that the White House team has essentially committed itself to its Wall Street constituents, and that they will be sacrificing these programs on the altar of deficit cutting that they have. They're inclined to talk about in the same kind of loose way that the Republicans do.
Now, I know we may be getting slightly out of your area of expertise, but I just want to, before we say goodbye, I'm curious as to when you say that you have this fear that the Obama administration may be carrying out this agenda for its Wall Street constituents. What is the impetus here? I mean, because I look at how much money he raised off of Wall Street. It's not an inordinate amount. It's single-digit percentages. And, you know, for someone who's raising $500 million, that's significant, but it doesn't seem to be completely overbearing. Is this constituency that is fighting to, let's say, cut Social Security, is it a function of simply an ideological dispute with the idea of Social Security? Is it a function of not wanting to have tax obligations to raise revenue in the future so that to allow this money to be paid back to the Social Security Trust Fund? Or is it simply just that these people are the masters of the universe, and if they think it's a good idea, then I will too?
Well, I think the campaign against Social Security has been going on for 70 years,
right,
since the program was first established, has some constants to it. The fact is there is a large stream of revenue that comes into the government through the payroll tax, and then a vast stream of benefits which is paid out by the Treasury Department in a very inexpensive way. And there is a whole industry out there, an insurance industry and an industry of brokers and so forth, that would love to get their hands onto this business at a time when much of their other businesses are squeezed. Boy, oh boy, you can make money charging commissions on private savings accounts and life insurance accounts and things of this nature. And that has been the golden fleece, if you like, this group of people has been pursuing for a long time. So I think there is an economic motive associated with this. And there's also there's also something ideological here, which just galls the right wing and the financial interests in this country to see a government program which is demonstrably well-functioning, sensible, and inexpensively run. And Social Security is a great example that the government can, in fact, do a job that the private sector never did effectively and could not do effectively. So there's a little bit of that involved, too. What else? It's again hard for me to say. I don't associate with such people personally. But it seems to me that here is a very clear-cut case where one could make a very common-sense argument. Why the administration won't do it, what their links are to Wall Street, this is an administration which did start with considerable support from Wall Street, has always been approached the economic crisis from a very bank-friendly point of view, and has, I think, paid an enormous political price for not taking a realistic approach to the crisis of the banks and to the defects of the banking system. And I think the attitudes that come from that sector are very much part and parcel of the way the president looks at issues.
Well, Professor James Galbraith, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your time and would love to have you back as developments, I guess, develop.
Thank you very much. Nice talking with you.
Yes, thank you. All right, folks. I will take your IMs on the other side of this break. That was Professor James Galbraith. And tomorrow on this program, we will have... Is it tomorrow? I'm not sure. But we're going to be talking about Social Security all this week, as I said in the email blast I sent out to you. And in anticipation, or not all this week, not every day. But we're going to be talking about it... at least one or two more days this week. And in anticipation, this is going to be a big fight, folks. I will take your IMs on the other side. Folks, if you have the opportunity to become a member, a Majority Report member, I cannot tell you, every day we look at the lists, And it's like literally it's every day is Christmas. Or some days it's like Christmas where Santa doesn't show up. But some days it's like Christmas. Dorsey, don't look like that. Like that. I'm Jewish. I don't know what to... A day without Santa is like just about every other day in my life. The point being, your support of this program makes it possible, period. Nothing else does. So if you have the opportunity to become a member, please do. And I will take your IMs on the other side of the break. Talk to you tomorrow. I will take your IMs at Majority FM or any other IM address you have for me. Folks, if you don't know how to send IMs, it really is sort of difficult to explain, isn't it? You need a chat client.
I always found signing up for AOL.
Yeah, just sign up for AIM, AOL. Go to put into Google... AOL Instant Message. It will take you to a page, and it'll walk you through it. I mean, I'm not being hoity-toity about this because, frankly, I think all of my IMs had to be set up by somebody, and then somebody set up Adium, and I can't even be bothered to change it. So I just know I have to hit one button now, like my father when it comes to IMing. I don't know why. I don't know why that's my that's like my blind spot. IMs. So did you guys have a good holiday? I know I spoke to Tevin about it. He sounded like he didn't spend a moment sober the whole weekend.
Or asleep.
You look pretty good, actually. I think it agrees with you. You look younger today. I'm not sure why that is.
Shaved.
Dorsey, you look like we need to check you into a hospital.
And I had plenty of rest. That's the funny thing.
You get sleep, and it actually makes you look like...
I think it's a bad thing.
You look chalky, almost.
Well, it's this weather. It doesn't agree with me.
You got to talk into the microphone, buddy.
The weather doesn't agree with me.
You know what we're going to do today? We're going to get that XLR cord.
Excellent.
I had a great weekend. Thanks, guys, for asking.
You do the talking on this.
I'll tell you something.
You wouldn't tell us how you
you know what we'll do? We'll play the battle hymn of Sarah Palin in just a moment. I have a feeling we may be playing that quite a bit in the days and weeks to come. But I had, Nikki's parents live in Michigan. My parents live in Massachusetts, and my mom actually spends more than half the year in Mexico now. Incidentally, she teaches a course down there in mixed media arts. So if anybody's interested in going down and taking a class, I can send me an email. I'll send you the details. People go down there. It's in Oaxaca. But aside from, and my sisters, one lives in California now and one lives in Italy. And so we never have and Nikki's an only child. Well, her brothers, half brothers, live the other end of the country. And they're only now old enough where I think we would even trust them. Nikki's brothers are like 18 years younger than her.
Wow.
And so when I met them, they were just punk kids. I would have to put the hurt on them. Now they're like 6 feet taller than me. But the point being that I think this weekend was the first time in 2 years that Nikki and I have been alone with each other overnight without Milo. Milo went to have a sleepover at her friend's house. And it was wonderful. And then some friends invited us to go. They had won like a dinner and a charity function. And we just had an amazing dinner and then came home and were able to party because there was no Mila. I slept. Of course, I got up at 7 in the morning for an hour. But I went back to bed for 2 more hours. So I didn't wake up until 10 in the morning. That was fantastic. I haven't done that in ages. Ages. And I would also want to let people know that my grapevine propagation project is underway. I am propagating 6 grapevines that I found in my backyard that actually produce grapes. Huh. And I'm going to see if I can plant them. And so I got that going, and I didn't watch the Golden Globes, but I did see a recap of Ricky Gervais. Somebody had a YouTube where they just had all Ricky Gervais, and he was awesome. I love an award show. And I, short of this one, I don't think I've ever seen it, frankly. It was a little bit reminiscent of Colbert at the Correspondents' Dinner. Mm-hmm. And there was a Nichols and May video I saw where I think they got an Emmy that reminded me of this. But Ricky Gervais got up there and just shat on everybody there. And not in a good-natured, hey, this is going to help me in the industry. I'm shitting on you, but I'm actually kissing your ass, and everybody can tell that. No, he cut to the bone, and I really enjoyed that. He didn't give a shit. I really enjoyed that. And then I tweeted out, like, something to the effect of, like, you know, I completed my, because somebody was telling me that the Golden Globes are on or something, and I'm like, I don't care, and I tweeted out, that I had started my grape propagation project, and I was convinced I was not going to win a Golden Globe for it because that thing has become a complete popularity contest. And then somebody tweets me and says, I think most of them are. And I realize, like, I can't really convey the proper amount of sarcasm in my tweets to get away with that. But I will keep you updated on the grape propagation thing because I know people are very excited about this. I can just feel the intensity as the IMs just, oh, I don't even know if we're going to have time to answer all the IMs today.
Are we going to have office wine? That's really my main concern.
Well, maybe in a couple of years.
Okay.
But I'll tell you something. You guys are going to be awful psyched when I come down here with a bushel of Concord grapes, completely unsprayed, delicious, in 3 to 7 years. You may be less excited when you find out that's actually going to be part of your compensation package. And I'm not talking the actual grapes. I'm talking the promise of grapes is going to be part of your compensation project. Your compensation. The promise of grapes. Let's do a couple of quick news stories. I will save the Creation Museum for tomorrow. Went through the healthcare repeal. There's some polls out showing that Obama is crushing his opponents. You know, not terribly relevant to me because I have left the... because I think he's going to win in 2012. The only thing that this is helpful for is if it kept people out of the race, it forced Sarah Palin to be the only person in the race. I don't think that's going to happen. Mitt Romney has all but basically declared that he's going to run. That's going to be fun to make fun of. It's going to be fun to see the Republicans get more and more angry.
Tim Pawlenty angry is going to be fun.
Tim Pawlenty is now talking about, I wouldn't vote for the debt ceiling. Give me a break. What a coward. And coincidentally, I'm not in a position to vote for the debt ceiling. Just a liar. They're just all liars. But if I thought that Obama feeling confident about his reelection would change his economic course in any fashion, I would be buoyed by these polls, but I don't think. The only thing that I can tell you is that there, if the polls are better, there is more room to agitate against Obama's policies. And I'm talking specifically about this Social Security thing. I am fully on board with the program that, sad to say, we're back in a defensive posture. There were good things that took place over the 2 years of the Obama administration. They weren't as good as I wanted them to be. Things like Lilly Ledbetter, good. Healthcare, on balance, good. Not great. Don't ask, don't tell repeal, good. Some regulatory issues on balance, good. Not so much in the financial world. A lot of missed opportunities. But missed opportunities are different than costs. And now I'm afraid we're going to have to fight some costs. So, Dav, frick it. I'm not even going to talk about these polls. Waste of my time right now. I'll tell you what I am interested in talking about is that apparently the socialists, communists, anti-nationalists, defeatocrats in Britain don't feel that it is unproductive to look back upon decisions they make, like going into war in Iraq. Now, remember, they have not spent the fortune, the lives, the, I don't know, stature that this country did in invading Iraq. They are not still bogged down there in Iraq like this country is, having peacekeeping forces. Bogged is maybe the wrong word. Maybe that we're just there because we're happy about it. But they are looking back on the decisions that led to that war. And beyond that, Tony Blair is now being summoned back to the inquiry into the Iraq invasion, because of new revelations that have taken place since he appeared there a year ago. And he's going back on January 21st. I guess that's in a week. The former prime minister will attend the inquiry for the second time after conflicting evidence was revealed about the legality of the invasion and assurances he gave George Bush. The inquiry is believed to be concerned about the revelation in documents it released in June. They show that the day before he privately assured Bush that he would back the U.S.-led military action, Blair was warned by Lord Goldsmith, then Attorney General, that an invasion of Iraq would be illegal. A note from Goldsmith to Blair, marked secret, dated January 30th, 2003, stated, "I thought you might wish to know where I stand on the question of whether or not the further decision of the, a further decision of the UN Security Council is legally required in order to authorize the use of force against Iraq. My view remains that a further UN decision is required." The document contained a handwritten note by David Manning, Blair's chief foreign policy advisor, which warned clear advice from attorney on need for further resolution. In other words, here's the advice. I want to reiterate, it's pretty clear. And I'm going to reiterate what the advice is. And then Blair scrawled in the margin, "I just don't understand this." One can only imagine what it is he doesn't understand. The clear advice or the clear clarifying of the and reiterating of the advice. "I don't understand how you people have not learned to give me plausible deniability." Seems the Americans have come quite adept at that. Perhaps maybe it's time for you to leave the confines of Oxford and Cambridge. Get your schooling at the School of Americas. The added bonus of the optional torture someone until their balls are blue course. Are they still calling it the School of Americas now, or are they calling it something else?
No,
I can't remember.
Something else.
The following day, Blair flew to Washington to see Bush. Manning noted that Bush told Blair that military action would be taken with or without a second Security Council resolution. Bombing would start in mid-March 2003. These are the famous memos, right? Or I guess this information came out in the famous memos that Bush had already decided in January, while weapons inspectors were still doing their job, that he was going to invade, because they always knew they were going to invade. It's all a lie. And so you have Blair being brought in front of this inquiry for the second time, and the questions are going to be start becoming a little more difficult for him to answer in light of new evidence. Meanwhile, J. Gerald Herbert, and we're going to try and get this guy on, a former acting Justice Department chief, served the government's enforcement wing in varied capacities between 73 and 94. A 21-year vet. Was asked about what he thought about Tom DeLay's conviction in Texas, and he said it was reprehensible that there were no federal charges brought against this guy. Obama's administration... the Justice Department in August closed down a six-year investigation in DeLay without filing a single charge. Yet, this this DA in a county in Texas could figure it out? He said, this is reprehensible. It's reprehensible that they have not gone after the Bush administration, that they have actually advocated on behalf of foreign jurisdictions to not bring charges against them. He says the American public will pay a price. And this is what I've been saying for God knows how many years. That when you... We can see this. There's two parallels where we can see this. When you pardon everybody for Watergate, where there's no accountability for that type of lawbreaking, where you pardon everybody or exculpate people by giving them indemnity, such as we saw in Iran-Contra, you create a moral hazard. In the same way that we created a moral hazard with the savings and loan and then the subsequent countrywide bailout, we basically say you're not going to be responsible. In the case of the financial sector, it's the government will come in and bail you out. Don't worry about it. Keep taking crazy risks. And that's why we're seeing this crazy risk, the derivatives, we still see it. Because we send a message. We will bail you out. Don't worry about it. And when you do not hold elected officials accountable to some type of standard in terms of what honesty, what ethics, what laws they're supposed to respect in regard to the American public and to their elected positions, you get more of it. And they seem to have figured this out in Britain. And they seem to have figured out in, frankly, every other country that is not run by a despot. But in this country, it is the soft despotism, I don't know how to express this, of whitewash. And of not wanting to rock the establishment boat. There's a pecking order. And if people are held to account, the perks, the corruption, And these perks and corruption are not just with our government officials. They must be with our establishment media as well. Otherwise, the government officials wouldn't be able to get away with it. Do you think for a moment the idea of simply turning the page, the idea of, as revealed by the cables leaked via WikiLeaks, the idea of turning the page, we're not going to look into this in this country. We're not going to hold investigations. We're not even going to question how we ended up in Iraq when there was no weapons of mass destruction there. How that decision was made. Who propagated? Who lied? Who knew what went? About torture. About rendition. We're not going to look into these things. And if any other government around the world tries to, we are going to leverage our strength and keep them from doing it. This is happening in the freest country in the world. Do you think this administration will be able to get away with that if it weren't for the David Broders, the David Brooks, all the Davids? The Jonathan Alters, every responsible center and center-left establishment, and right, of course, establishment journalist and opiner. The American public doesn't want this, blah, blah, blah. Who cares? A, I don't think it's true. But B, who cares? Who cares? Maybe the American public would not want to prosecute someone who stole money from wealthy individuals. Should we suspend the laws in that instance? Maybe the American government would not want to prosecute certain uses of IP, of so-called intellectual property. Copyrights? You think the American public would care if it had access to Disney material 25 years ago? Well, I don't think so. There's many things the American public may or may not want. But I certainly don't believe that a millionaire journalist or author can sit here and reasonably tell me what the American public wants in the absence of any type of leadership there. Never mind of which, we never hear about what the American public wants when it comes to cutting Social Security. It's reprehensible that we have not had investigations into the torture and lies and illegal invasion and occupation of Iraq. It's reprehensible. And worse than being reprehensible, forget the morality. It is going to lead to more lying to the American public. It's going to lead to more follies like this. It's going to lead to more hundreds of thousands of civilian deaths in the future. I don't know when, but it will. Because we're not holding these people accountable. Let's get to IMs. I'll read more news stories tomorrow. That's the way it's going to work, folks, incidentally. We're going to have more news stories in the members-only post-show. Because that's what the American people want. As a millionaire journalist, I can tell you. We don't need the cackling and laughter from the peanut gallery here, gentlemen. Did you see the ratings that I got for when I filled in for Holden?
Did you see me? I sent them to you that night.
Yes, well, that's how I saw
them. I thought I'd give you a nice little...
That was nice. I don't know. I don't know if I have a future there or not. But it's nice to go out on top. That's the way I leave all my jobs. Doing well. I also want to say... to my good friend and former producer of MR1, as I like to call it now, Majority Report 1, happy birthday to Josh. And after you guys leave the show and then send me an email to remind me about your birthday, you will also get a birthday notice on the program. Good morning, Sammy from Neferkitty. John Bonair is a Renaissance man. He is in touch with his feelings and not afraid to cry in public. Of course, he is sensitive to the words that are used in the discourse of politics. Absolutely. Trip! Sounded more like George Jones to me. No idea what you're referring to. Jay Chavone.
The singer from the Battle
of okay.
George Jones.
Great. May I suggest that you consult with Liz Winstead for pointers regarding your Palin impression? Not to be harsh, but you sounded like Mrs. Goldberg from the old-timey radio program, which could have been deliberate since you were discussing blood libel. Yes. I was picking up part Jewy. I was doing a Sarah Palin trying to be Jewish to get away with the blood libel thing.
Brilliant.
Thank you. Thank you. Finally.
Oh, hey, is Don't Be a Putz on there?
I don't know yet, but I will. Matthew's asking me condolences on the Pats. What a crappy game. It looked crappy from the beginning. I mean, it just, you know, I'm starting to worry that there's something wrong with the Patriots because they underperform in the playoffs.
They just got beat by New Jersey.
Hmm?
That was some New Jersey team there. They got beat by
the New York Jets.
Well, I mean, they used to be the New Jersey Jets, didn't they?
No. They play. They play. I don't think they were the New Jersey. They play in New Jersey.
Well, I always grew up thinking of them as mine.
Didn't they used to play at Shea?
They used to play at Shea, and then they went over to...
In the Meadowlands.
Meadowlands.
So they'd be the Queens Jets then.
Well, listen.
Wait, they were the... I don't know. I don't know.
Whatever. They beat the Patriots.
Yeah. Link to the YouTube of the Golden Globes. We'll post that. Did I send that to you? I know
you
I have.
Always check out New York Magazine, too. There's a
roundup
there.
Oh, yeah?
I slaved over.
Did you put all of them in there?
No, I had to keep it under 3 minutes.
Oh, no. There's 13 minutes of just, and it's the only way to watch that show.
Yes.
I heard people were pissed.
Yeah, they were mad. One of my jobs was to do screen grabs of the reactions of the people in the crowd, and they made a slideshow of it over there. And like, yeah, he was not making many people happy. But I mean,
good for him.
Who cares?
He was on the Majority
Report. They're not going to be.
He came in studio.
Oh, he did.
Really?
Yeah,
he's great. He's really funny. But he won't be doing that next year.
Methinks he does not care.
Jon Stewart said something. He said, I was offended that a comedian could be that funny at an award show.
That's great. That's a great response.
It was good.
Oh, the Nichols and May thing was actually really good, too, because he got up and he and Nichols basically made an argument that, like, you know, we want to talk about people who obviously are the real bedrock of our industry in television. And but they don't get the acclaim they really should for just being really mediocre at their jobs. They come in and they don't really care about what they're doing, and they just get it done, and it's what makes it. And it's like a 7-minute acceptance speech, all just on like the mediocrity of everybody sitting in the audience. It's fantastic. I'll dig that up. Jay Shivo, don't make me block you. From the IM, for criticizing my impressions. G-Beard, hi, Sam. I got to tell you again, you keep getting them mixed up. You mean the Welsh flag, not the Scottish one, is proof. Yes, I know. I know, but I also say this because that's what the guy said to me on the phone when I did that call to the Creationist Museum. As proof that dinosaurs lived contemporaneously with men. You're right. Oh, wait. That's today. Yeah. Avant. Don't be a putz. Recap is up. Folks, if you ever miss a podcast, go to the recap. We should almost put a link. Is there a way for us to link to the recap embedded in the... No.
What I was doing is copying and pasting it and putting in with a link to... to Avant's Tumblr blog, which, I mean, that's, he's also including, you know, video.
He's got video and great stuff.
He just sent me a what do you call it, a transcript from the rep Steve Farley with the interview with him the other day. He said, would this be useful?
Wow. I
had a chance to get that.
Incredibly useful.
Yeah.
Avant, how are you doing the transcript? I hope you're doing it automated. Really amazing. Did you see this anonymous novel, O, that is supposedly written by an insider talking about a politician named O running for re-election in 2012? No, I didn't see that. I will check it out. Hey, when is Stephen Elliott's book coming out? Wait, what did I just do? Avant just had his own window. Oh God. Oh, that's pretty cool. I didn't know I could do that. Cat Foudon. Off topic, but what's the secret to making chicken salad like you get at the local kosher deli? I always went out of business, so I'm trying to make it my own. It keeps coming out like tuna salad, except with chicken. Less mayonnaise, grapes, celery. Mustard. I'm almost offended that you asked me that. Fry pop film. It appears your daughter's invested in the concept of Santa. Why not use the Ustream chat room? I don't know how those two relate. Well, people can set up a chat room if they want, but I mean, I can't go into that chat room.
What about that thing that you were looking at that you could attach to the website? Doesn't that have something?
Yeah, actually, we may have a chat thing soon. I've just been salamied.
Hey, it looks like Stephen Elliott's book is out. The Adderall Diaries?
No, not the Adderall Diaries.
No, there's a new one.
The new one. He's got one about Rumsfeld.
Oh.
He and somebody else wrote. It is. He was telling me about it. I should really talk about this on Friday, on Name Drop Friday. But he was telling. Did I? Wait, I discussed it the other day, didn't I?
Briefly.
He was. It is. He takes all of the true aspects of the torture regime, everything that we did, like rendition and whatnot, that is in news reports, and has it happen to a modern day, not a modern day, but Donald Rumsfeld in retirement. He gets picked up, and he said, like, you know, Rumsfeld ends up being like a very likable character, very sympathetic, because he's an old man who's really, really smart, trying to figure out why he's being tortured. To build an oil pipeline. That's why we went to war. I don't know if it's just a pipeline, but I imagine controlling oil is the reason. The torch issue was resolved, Sam. It was decided that five enlisted people try to treat people in violation of military law and stack about 10 men naked in the middle of a jail room without catching them. I wonder why they thought it was okay.
Looks like February 8th, the same day Rumsfeld publishes his memoir.
That's right. He told me that. That's fucking hilarious. Glenn Greenwald just posted a great article detailing the Obama administration's policy of continuing and solidifying Bush war on terror policies. Yet another potent reminder of how Obama's cashing in on the overall low standards Bush established. At least he can speak in complete sentences. Yes, Eurospa Mesed. I agree. Frisbane. Slogan to motivate Tea Party. Fox people, tell Obama to get his government hands off my Social Security. Yes. Upbeat Nihilist. Really enjoyed your analysis of Krugman's Tale of Two Moralities. Op-ed, and would love to share it with others, like today's Galbraith interview with people. Any thoughts about cutting up audio segments for shows for easy sharing? Did we put that YouTube, the Krugman on YouTube?
No. Actually, I just got a request from somebody at America Blog that wanted that media, and I got it up really quickly over at Official FM. So that is embeddable. I will.
Can we link to our – you know what we need to do on our page is link to Official FM and to YouTube. Mm-hmm. So Upbeat Nihilist, we will link on our front page to clips of to today's interview with Galbraith, whether we put it on YouTube or in audio form. We're doing both. We just need to start to sort of congeal everything and figure out a process in which everybody has access to this stuff. But thank you for the request, and keep an eye out. We'll have it. If we haven't posted it within a day, email us at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Capital Iraq. Is it possible that there was more in the tax cut deal than we know about? Remember how upset everyone was when it happened? On the online forums, people were talking about a primary. Then a short time later, the votes magically appear for the Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal. Do you think the tax cut deal might have included the later passage of Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal in the START Treaty? For Republicans? No. No, I don't think so. I mean, I think that there was a greater need to do it. There was maybe more urgency because of the fallout, but I don't think those were involved. Don't know if I should send this again, but I sent it too early. So is it possible that there was more? Oh, now I got it. I mean, it's possible, but I don't think so. I think to the extent that there's more there than meets the eye, I think the issue is that it really just part of the Obama administration agenda rather than a capitulation of sorts. I'm happy now. Sam, do you think there'll be any across-the-board adjustments to mortgages acquired before 2007? In other words, will the banks ever take a hit or be punished for their evil? Good show today. There will not be an across-the-board adjustment. I don't even know if we will ever get the much-promised cram down, which essentially would have allowed bankruptcy judges to do adjustments to mortgages on a piecemeal basis, on a case-by-case basis, where they could literally cram down the principal. I think the time for a universal sort of government program of essentially cramming down principals, I don't think that's going to happen. However, and I will get to this story tomorrow, but Maryland, basically, GMAC, basically took 10,000 mortgage foreclosures off the table because of a lawsuit brought in Maryland, and they thought they couldn't win the lawsuit. They basically, it was all robo-signing stuff. And between this and the Ibanez case in Massachusetts, I think banks are going to have a real tough time showing that they have the right to foreclose on a lot of stuff, because they're going to have trouble coming up with a chain of title. Long Shadow 73. Sam, I missed all of today's show. Can you type a quick transcript for me? All right. Check out Avant's blog. We'll put it on ours, but you got to check out Majority Report Recap.tumblr. Chump. Just because I haven't played in a long time.
You are a douchebag.
I don't really mean it, but I just miss it. Folks, there are little things working in the background. I don't know if you can hear it. They're developing a phone system right now as we speak. Can't wait for it. Spayef, is a winery in your future? Out here in Oregon, it's really taken off. Nothing like going to a vineyard and looking out over foothills of an east of the Coast Range. Just a reminder, people can also listen on Stream Furious on their smartphones, and it is live. Whoa! Just a reminder? What do you mean, a reminder? I never heard that. Will you look that up, Stream Furious? You know, I would never do a grape winery because I think that's going to be... you can't I don't think I could make any money off it. It's to be too difficult. But I'll tell you what I would do. And I would make hard cider. You got a bunch of apple trees, and it's perfect for hard cider. Because, you know, we don't do anything with them. We don't spray them anything. They don't look very good. They taste great. Hard cider. And you know what else I'm getting into is Applejack.
Yeah, I was going to say apple brandy.
Oh.
It's good stuff.
You guys like that?
Oh, yeah. Make a good Jack Rose with it. You're not supposed to use anything else, honestly, to make a real Jack Rose.
What's a Jack Rose?
It's that with some kind of, like, red flavoring. I forget. What's the red alcohol stuff? Sweet. Grenadine?
Campari?
Grenadine.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
You know what is also really good with Applejack is a cider.
Huh.
Applejack, cider, and ice. Sweet. God. I'm drunk right now. Sammy, camera one, I don't get it. Tony Blair had to pretend to be dumber than Bush to become Bush's lapdog in pursuit of a reckless Iraq policy. Why did he do it? Look, you know what? It wouldn't. Who knows? We see the shadows of these things. Even, you know, like, if we're lucky, we see the shadows. Do you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Do you know what I'm saying? You don't know what I'm saying, Dorsey.
I have no idea. Look.
I'm going to show you what I'm talking about. Look. See on that wall? That's what we see. To the extent that you can get a notion of what it is that you're looking at, very hard to tell. Sometimes you can tell that you're looking at a hand, but you're not looking at a hand. You're looking at the shadow of a hand. So my point is that when we start to break down stuff like at that level, if we're lucky, we get a vague notion that we're seeing a vague notion of what is really behind it. You know, it's like people who before, you know, back in 2008, you know, people listen to Air America, they have a shadow of understanding of what's going on. They see a reflection. And it's not nearly as obscure and as intense as this stuff. That's the only way I can describe it because, you know, we were sort of like a closed administration with different parts of the administration that would speak out in different ways to show some dissent. And then you had the audience who was sort of, you know, intimately aware or wanted to be intimately aware and couldn't figure out what was going on. But even there, I couldn't figure out what was going on. Obama, accountability for Bush. But let's not bicker and argue over who killed who. This should be a happy occasion. ToddSlater.com. I've debated this moral hazard concept with people many times, but I've never heard the actual term moral hazard until you mentioned it today. Love it. Well, moral hazard is an economic term. It's a term that they use when they are discussing what you don't want. A moral hazard is when you essentially incentivize or do not disincentivize financial institutions from making bad loans or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's a financial term. But I'm glad I could help, Todd. Dede Fru just got up. One of the perks of early retirement. I'll have to listen to the podcast for today. Peace.
Looks like Stream Furious is an Android supporter, and I'm just about to tweet it out. So
what's that?
It's for Android.
Not for iPhone.
Well, that's what it says on their Twitter account. It says streaming audio app for your Android phone. So I'm assuming no. Huh. But still, that's pretty live. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That means next week they'll probably have one for iPhone.
I once grew the finest two plants Mother Nature ever saw. Didn't need to smoke, just pop a bud, swallow, instant mellow.
Let me guess who that's from.
No, from Dede Fru.
Oh.
Avedon! Long time no hear. They were always the New York Jets.
Oh, they were. Okay. Sorry.
6, 7, 8. You see Hollywood Foreign Press stated Gervais would never be nominated for future performances based on his hosting duties. Wonder how many other actors, comedians are backlisted from that organization. I don't know about it today, but back when I was, you know, more sort of like in the show business world, everybody knew Golden Globes was just about being bribed. It was just basically who was going to take them out to the nicest dinners and junkets. Don't be a putz. Closest thing Gervais to the performance was probably Letterman's turn hosting the Oscars. But Gervais was even meaner. David Brooks and Broder are cowards who simply know how to keep their jobs. Remember Ashley Banfield? Yes. How about Phil Donahue? MSNBC had Jesse Ventura under contract for 5 years and refused to allow him on air. That's the kind of gig I want. You have to be quite principled to give up a big paycheck. Sad to say, even Rachel Maddow won't really do anti-war stories anymore. She was a huge cheerleader for the end of the Iraq War TV event.
Now she's like embedded over there, you know, very cozy with, what was it, Holbrook before he died. She's kind of hawkish, though, you know. She's a little bit hawkish.
Yeah, she's in that world. I mean, she's in that, you know, sort of defense world a little bit. You know, it's tricky. I mean, it's hard not to get caught up in sort of like ratings, and I imagine that you could probably find data over there that would suggest that if we do I mean, I don't know this for a fact. This is speculative on my part. Please understand, I'm speculating. We talk about war, it hurts ratings, or there's a perception that it does. And, you know, when I do Olbermann, you know, there are stories that I wouldn't necessarily do, and I wouldn't necessarily do in that way. I've told people that before. That's why I would love just a contributor gig over there to keep doing this show. I like doing this show because I, to the extent that we ever talk about, well, first of all, we don't get ratings in that way. And there's so many different factors with people downloading podcasts and listening live that we can kid ourselves that the content is great at all times. If there's, you know, so we don't have to really address that. But format. Oh, okay, Avant. I already talked to Kev. I say, I don't need an exact dollar figure, but I was curious. How well does Countdown pay you to host? How much do guests make? Does everyone get the same amount of money? Thanks. Let's see. I'm going to try and be not specific with this. As a guest, you get about zero. And as a guest host, I don't know. Guests on news, on TV, you know, same with CNN. I don't get anything. You got to be a contributor to get paid. That makes you exclusive over there. I would love that type of situation. Hi, Johnny. Hey, Sam. Your point about rich pundits claiming to speak for the American people reminds me when Chris Matthews was poo-pooing that recent poll that showed Americans would rather cut defense spending and raise taxes on the rich than cut social security. Of course. Of course. Kevin Semicolon. You can pre-order Donald from McSweeney's. It ships February 1. I'm going to get Elliot. Will you make a note for me to get Elliot to send me one?
Pre-order. I'm not going to give him a dollar.
Actually, I probably should. Forget it. U.S. plans to sue 4 states over laws requiring secret ballots for unionizing. What? National Labor Relations said it would sue South Carolina over recent state amendments that require secret ballots for unionization. Oh, so they could do open ballots. Is that it? Sort of like a EFCA. I'm going to look into that. Oregon does rock, but more for ales, beers rather than wine. Good luck with the grapes, apples, moonshine. Dactyl, what do you think of someone like Alan Grayson running as a primary challenger to Obama to get the pro-middle-class message out there and move Obama's capitulating ass to the left? Well, I think we've seen that he can move to the left during the campaign. Doesn't mean anything. I mean, I think there is value if a Grayson says, I am running with no expectation of winning, but of expectation to be able to carry forward a message. I'd be interested in that. See him have a national forum. Hey, Sam, what do you take away from the exposure of flawed foreclosures? That people should automatically challenge any foreclosure process? Yes. Yes. Be careful about asking for your note before that process. Because I have heard reports of people who are asking Bank of America to see their note and them getting dinged on their credit report as having challenged the validity of their note. But if you are in a foreclosure process, yes, demand to see proper chain of title to that mortgage. Demand to see the note, see who owned it, get it outlined how it went from your the person who originated the note to that place. Capital Rockcracy. I wouldn't be so sure about being so easy to defeat Sarah Palin in 2012. She may have low numbers among Republicans now, but watch that change when she's the candidate. Only hope would be that disenchanted Dems are energized by the need to defeat her. Dude, never in a million years will she win a national election. Never. 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 I'm happy now. What happened to the iTunes? We couldn't get it for about a week. Yeah. Good freaking question, but it's back up now. And we finally have the icon is there. iTunes had a problem. It was a problem with iTunes. We were doing everything. We were crying about it. I think QuickTime should open an iPhone. When I click on your icon in my touch, that's what happens. Yes, you can listen live by just coming to the live stream, and it will open on your iPhone. You don't need an app for it. Todd Slater, ironic. The holiday fraud stumbled upon something that Gervais that generates huge buzz for the GGs outside of its usual audience. And they can't wait to distance themselves from him. Yeah. Dede Fru. Right, no, I got that. Don't be a putz. Do you remember when Jon Stewart shit all over Chris Matthews a few years ago? Didn't he get as much publicity as Kramer or Tucker or Carlson? No way that isn't one of Dorsey's favorite moments. I think I do remember that.
I missed that. What was that? Sorry.
Do you remember when Jon Stewart shit all over Chris Matthews a few years ago?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I guess it wasn't his favorite. Crystal Count, heard you mention Stitcher Live. You're not on the live feed until the live feed can loop 24 hours. Rachel's ready to go once it does. Okay.
Oh.
Could we do that?
I don't know.
Maybe.
I like they know it.
Tim, do you use Facebook? What for? No. Nothing. I use Facebook. It's a way for us to get our our videos out there to people. It's just one more way of contacting people. All right, folks, that's for today's show. And see you tomorrow.
She's a cool blast from Alaska, ingrained with common sense. She's not a Harvard lawyer, but she knew what the founders meant. A cold blast from the north that freezes Congress in their tracks. With God and the Tea Party, she's gonna take it back. Sarah Palin, she won't listen to their bunk. Sarah Palin's coming south to hunt some skunk. Sarah Palin, she'll throw them all in jail. When she gets to Washington, it'll be cold as hell.
with God and the Tea Party. She's gonna take it back. Sarah Palin, she won't listen to their bunk. Sarah Palin's coming south to hunt some skunk. Sarah Palin, she'll throw them all in jail. And when she gets to Washington, it'll be cold as hell. Congress pat themselves on the back from some new bill they just passed. I watch as my freedom slowly runs through an hourglass. They think they spend our money better than we do. If they can talk until they're blue and old. Because if they ever gave us anything, they always wanted something in return. Sarah knows.
Tea Party and all the patrons.